Hey guys, on this episode of EdTech, we're going to be talking with Rob Raspberry, Ernie Bailey, and Scott Tyner. We're going to be covering college networking hacks, AV security, and 100 rooms in 20 days in Texas. All this and more on EdTech.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is EdTech, episode 72, The College Hack.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by
Extron, industry-leading technology backed by world-class support.
This is EdTech, the monthly higher ed tech podcast. I'm your host, Bill O'Donnell, and as always, I'm joined by the illustrious Scott Tyner. How are you, sir?
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Indeed. Mr. Rob Raspberry, how are you, sir?
Greetings. How's everybody doing?
Indeed. And last but not least, Mr. Ernie Bailey. And Ernie actually is coming to us mobile. He's currently in transit he's currently in Fairfax heading back home to Little Rock.
Actually, I'm in Atlanta right now. I'm at my midpoint.
Okay. Fair enough. He's probably ritzing it up in the Delta Lounge as we speak.
Oh, yeah.
So... The first article we're going to cover today comes to us from Commercial Integrator, and it is covering the NSCA's business and leadership conference, which if you ever get the chance, it is a fun conference to attend. It's a good back and forth between standards, integrators, and mostly just business manufacturers and integrators, but it is a good way to kind of get some back and forth on it. So the the actual meat of the article covers over the fact that the NSCA, which is National Systems Contractors Association, try to say that three times fast, is actually been going over all the various amounts of legislation that is happening across the U.S. Now, some of the bigger legislation in the article it covered were things like in Utah, how they're realigning what's considered actual high voltage or what's considered low voltage and things like that. You know, pretty much anything under, for them, it's anything under 50 volts. So, you know, yay on the fact that hypothetically phantom power could end up being yay or nay. It's, you know, it goes from 24 to 48 to even 52. But the other one was, in certain cases, like, in Ernie's case, I believe, aren't you guys a right-to-work state or no?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So one of the things is that that they were talking about the legislation that they're working on, or at least, you know, trying to fight or work through. One of them, once again, going back to Utah for a minute, it required that there has to be X number of electrical journeymen for every unskilled laborer. Now, I know from my own doings, and I'm sure with Rob and Scott, when you end up having to do union jobs and everything, which might add, they're not bad, it's just a matter of how you do the planning, usually there's a one-to-one ratio. So if there's one apprentice, there's one journeyman. Now, this, once again, varies from state to state and everything. And in Ernie's case, I'm sure he just goes and, you know, if he needs to get a licensed electrician, you know, in most cases for us, it's usually the facilities or capital plans folks that can just as easily go and say, oh, yeah, we'll do it and we'll work this out through whatever overtime or, you know, chargeback or things like that. But it is something interesting to keep in mind, being that, you know, when we have larger scale projects, this is going to affect us. And more to the point, this is going to affect how you plan everything out. So, you know, Scott, I'll ask you on this one and I'll go back to Ernie in that when it comes to certain very large scale installations, there are times where it's just, yeah, the electricians are going to be the ones pulling all the cabling and everything. Granted, it's, you know, these days it's kind of streamlined down to, you know, maybe some minor low voltage cabling and, you know, it tends to be a lot of shielded Cat 6, but I'm going to ask for you guys' opinion on this one. When it comes to actually kind of wrangling electricians, Is it one of those things where you have to be more lawyer-like, or is it one of those things where it's, you know what, this is the goal we want to get accomplished, you know, let's try to work with everyone? So.
Yeah, at Bates, we're fairly lucky that we have a pretty close, I mean, we're a small shop, right? We have a fairly close relationship with our electrical group here. We have a really good relationship with our facilities planning group. And as we're planning new buildings, like you said, a really large scale stuff, we're going to just outsource all of that right into that project. I think as I read this article, I think it's really interesting because you think as a contractor or an installer, this is going to really affect you. But of course, it's going to affect any of us. It's about money. It's about having more people on site. So I think that it's really good for tech managers to have some place to learn about this kind of stuff as well. Whether it's an organization in Infocom or if it's, you know, podcasts like this, to get to know this stuff and be prepared for it when we hear from the integrators is critical.
Yeah. The other end of it is just, it is one of those things where you have to look at, like, you do have to keep up to date with certain things. Granted, I'm never going to be a licensed electrician, but it is helpful to know certain things like basic electrical code. So for example, in New Jersey, there was some changes to the electrical code in the fact that, outlets couldn't be above the ceiling anymore. They actually all had to be down below the ceiling. So all the mounts and everything else down below the ceiling. And, you know, it's one of those things where it used to be, oh yeah, sure, just throw it up in the ceiling and, you know, pray that no one ever pops open the ceiling tile. Because, you know, I will admit every now and then with new construction jobs, there have been times where I've popped open a ceiling tile and a pair of lineman's pliers just, you know, came tumbling right out. But once again, those are stories of yore.
You always find the best tools in ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
You find the craziest stuff in the ceiling when you pop it open.
Yes. Either that or else my personal favorite. You can tell when they were trying to get everything done before this stuff got laid in. And that was two things. Either the snap-in metal tile ceiling grids, because, you know, you have to almost get like a spackle knife with a special notch to pull the thing down. But the other one was the blown fiberglass ceiling tiles, because just – no matter how much soap or gloves you had on, just, you know, after a little while, you would end up sounding like Patty and Selma from The Simpsons. You used to be like, hi, guys, how is it? It's like, are you up in the ceiling? How'd you know? But, yeah, so, Ernie, I'm going to actually come back to you on this one. When it comes to, like, some of the LART, like, you know, it's a contracted install and everything. Obviously, you guys are going to have to work with the electricians, or at least work with the contract, you know, the electrical house that's doing it. Is it one of those things where you guys just try to develop a better relationship with the electrical house, or is it just one of those you go and say, well, we've already documented everything out, this should be paint by numbers, have a good day?
We have a good relationship. All of our electrical work, even for if we're bringing outside contractors, is done by the in-house electrical team on campus. And I've got a good relationship. We just walk over and say, Chris or David, we need 20 amps here. Mm-hmm. I need 20 amps between these three spots. Mm-hmm. And I need it, you know, either at switch height or a regular outlet height or up at the ceiling. And it's mm-hmm. one of those deals. Code can vary depending on the type of ceiling, whether I have power above ceiling or not. So I just tell them I need power for a projector right here. Mm-hmm. I want my cables hidden as well as possible. Mm-hmm. And they take care of us.
Okay.
But like I said, that's if we're doing a whole new building construction, you know, there may be an outside electrical company in. But once again, if there's going to be at least one classroom in it, I'm on the building committee and I'm meeting with the contractors every week. So I'll just make sure we've got what we need.
All right. I will say from my own experience right now, we're currently doing a new dorm. Now there's one classroom in there. So it's the only reason, you know, myself is getting dragged into this thing. But the fun bit has been, just putting in some back boxes. And the fun part about it is that normally, you know, there's established, heights and everything else. And we've been going back and forth, and the contractor went and did a mock-up And I went and said, hey, at what height did you guys put the back box? Oh, we put it at 4 foot. Okay, let me go walk over, check, and everything else. It was at 3.5 foot. I'm like, it's not even close. And I said, you know what? You actually need to put the back box at 5 foot. Oh, that's a change order. I went, no, you did a mock-up. This is literally like, what do you think? Is this the correct thing? They haven't even, because the other end of this part was the fact that they sealed up the walls where the back box was supposed to go. Strangely enough, they remembered to put the plywood backing in and then put the drywall over it, and they've already painted over. So, yeah, this is one of those ones where I just look and I go, okay, I'm going to work with you guys. I really want to just get this one and done. But this is a back box for a display. Like, this is not brain science. This is not brain surgery. It is brain science, and the fact that I'm amazed my brain cells haven't snapped in two from it, but still. Mr. Raspberry, how about you? You guys, as I say, when you guys are dealing with an upgrade or anything like that, is it more you're dealing with the stuff in-house, or is it when it comes to a new install, obviously you have, you know, outside electricians, and how do you do it? You know, do you get like a box of donuts and a box of Joe and go and say, look, I bought you guys coffee. Come on.
There you go. Dunkin' Donuts. So basically, I think it's pretty much the same in a lot of our institutions, where you have facilities or you have in-house electricians, and you put in your work orders and they come out and they take care of all the pre-installation stuff before an integrator comes in and needs to do whatever specialized installation and equipment and running lines that they need to. So we have a pretty good relationship with facilities, but you know, there's times where you just have to go with their timeline because you're sort of bound by, you know, what other projects and stuff that they're being allocated to do. So, you know, you work your best as you can with them because, you know, everybody's got to work together. You can't have anything without power. So, you know, you better play nicely.
Yeah.
I was going to say that what sort of caught me about this article is the whole legislation and the need for organizations to sort of set up standards and make sure that people are sort of playing by the rules. I mean, I can't speak for why it would take five journeymen for, you know, one unskilled, you know, worker. I don't know where that's coming from, but the good thing is that they caught that and or made people aware of this is how things are going to be. So, you know, Ernie, you're working on CTS questions and standards for the exam. You know, these kinds of things are good so that people know across the board what's being expected, what works, what isn't work, what's suspect, what's not, that kind of thing. So I find the whole legal part of this article was very interesting.
Yeah, from the standpoint of the standards and practices, and once again, Ernie knows so much about the standards, practices, as well as test questions, which, you know, I may or may not try to bribe him with my various means and ways later on. I'm sorry.
I signed an NDA yesterday, so.
Yeah, dang it. Coincidentally, that is one of those things that everyone goes, oh, yeah, an NDA, whatever. And then you actually look into the actual fine details of what can be done to you afterwards. You're like, oh, this is worse than jail.
Yes.
Mostly because it's bankruptcy. So anyway, our next article comes up to us via AV Network. This is a quick article. It's about the fact that hackers broke into an admissions database and then actually offered to sell the school back their admissions files. Now, if you look at the original article and everything, it says that they got in via Slate. But there's actually a second link article in there from the Chronicle of Higher Ed, and it's actually they actually hacked into the system, the actual network of the school, and then from there they actually used the regular logins to actually get all the information from Slate. So it's kind of true, but not really. But you know, it really must have gone nowhere because the original hacker said, "Oh, we're going to, you know, you can buy this back for one Bitcoin," which, you know, if you're going to go into cryptocurrency, and believing at the time that this whole thing went down, it's probably around, it's around like $4,000. Nobody said anything. And they said, okay, fine. $60. So, you know, it's one of those things of yes, I've got it. Okay. Well, we're going to do some things to it. Okay. Okay. $60. Okay. How about a sandwich? I don't know. it's one of those things where it just kind of comes back to security and AV. Now this is something I actually do want to ask all you guys. We have, as a standing mandate, we have a set password for our AV equipment and everything. Now, granted, it's kept on a separate VLAN, so there is some kind of gapping there to begin with. But we do tell all our integrators as a standard policy, here's our password and login for these devices. We do not want anything installed on campus in which the login is, you know, admin, because, you know, that's the de facto for everything. So I'm kind of curious, do you guys have, you know, either, you know, pre-install security requirements, or do you guys just simply go and say, all right, thanks, and then the moment the folks leave the room, you go and change everything over?
Well, we do most of our own installs. Look. So therefore we set the passwords, but yes, we do have a procedure in place where if we are bringing a contractor in, we separate the hardware from the install. So we'll buy all the hardware, hand it to an integrator. Mm-hmm. Say, this is what we want installed. Here mm-hmm. are all the rules. Here's a standard program that we would like you to modify as minimally as possible and make it work the system so it matches everything else we've got. Mm-hmm. These are the passwords, you know, these are the codec passwords. These are all the passwords for each different device that we mm-hmm. expect on there. And then we do have a procedure we go through and update most of these passwords on a regular basis.
Yeah, we go along the method of trust but verify. It's not that we don't like folks. It's just more along the lines of yeah, listen, they put it in. Okay. We also have, and I'll say this up front, our computer science folks at times can be very malicious. In fact, one of our comp sci kids figured out how to put in a little bit of malicious malware because, once again, our computer science department said, oh, you know what? We're going to build our own desktop image. And the computer science kiddos figured out an exploit. And next thing you know, we actually have had to remove all the PCs from a computer lab because of this. Yeah. So, once again, it's not that we don't trust folks, but, you know, kids can be, as I say, students can be jerks. Mr. Tyner, Mr. Raspberry, you, as I say, following the same suite, I'm guessing?
Pretty much, you know, when an integrator comes in and needs to access a codec, usually, you know, we let them in. And then on a new install, they may have a standard, you know, setup or password that they do for a controller or switcher or whatever. And then, and once the install's done, we go back and change the passwords to what we want.
Now, do you password encrypt the serial port?
Okay. Can't have everything. So
no.
I think, you know, your position of trust and verify is in place, and especially if they have to do an upgrade or do a revision or something like that. I would like to get to Ernie's point soon, where, you know, we're doing all our installs and doing that kind of thing, where we can more control that kind of situation. No. But yeah, I mean, password changes, updates, that kind of thing are all in place.
We have one other safeguard in that if an integrator does come in, they have to sign the security contracts for the campus, mm-hmm. explaining that any breach is a HIPAA violation.
Right.
So that makes it a minimum 5-figure penalty and probably jail time. So, okay, they're held responsible. So.
I don't think we can do that with our nursing department. Oh well. Mr. Tyner? Scott's just kind of
I'd hit the right button there. Yeah, we do very similar things. We actually tend not to share our passwords with anybody. If we need to have somebody take a look at it, we'll change the password and give it to them and then put it back to something different just for that extra layer of protection. When this story kind of broke last week about Slate, the thing that was most interesting to me, and I think is the lesson we can all get from it, is that hackers do look at educational institutions and think about, how can I get money from them? We get, I'm sure that you guys get, two or three spam messages a week that kind of are supposedly from the president or from the provost asking people to do things. And this just shows they, as you said, Bill, there was apparently no value in this. I actually think there's no value in what they did because they did it too late. I really think if they did this in September and said, what does the school really think of somebody like you? and we saw from other recent news that people probably would pay for something like that to help their kids get into college. But the piece there is they do care and they are watching and they are trying to get to us. So you have to be aware of that.
Yeah, it is one of those things where it's just a security thing. For us, it's looking at how we integrate out how we layer out the security. Obviously, since most of our stuff rides over the network, and especially if you're getting more IP intensive with, like, say you're using like Crestron's NVX line of products, or you're going Aurora or any of the SDVoE stuff, you have to keep an eye on all those things. But it's just a matter of kind of just installing basic strong password accesses and things like that. The only goof I can ever think is, you know, if we have to do some quick configuration before the stuff ever comes on site, I just always have the guys do what I like to call the Spaceballs password, which, you know, most manufacturers initially will go and say, okay. The only one that's actually ever rejected that was Cisco, because it's, that's too weak of a password. I'm like, anyway, ba-dum-bum. So last but not least, the last article comes to us from AV Magazine, and this one covers how Lone Star College in Texas upgraded 100 classrooms across 10 campuses in just 20 days. Now, once again, that's one of those, you know, how do they do all this? Well, if you read through with the article and everything, the integrator and the manufacturer both kind of work together, and they made essentially like kind of a plug and play kind of just drop in system. Is it the best? No. Is it functional? Oh yeah. If you look at the equipment list of these things, it's pre-molded cabling. A very quick one gang, touch. Well, as I say, I'm going to call it a touch panel. It's a one gang, control surface and everything. And, there's an occupancy sensor, I believe, in most of these, and a projector and some, ceiling speakers. And it's meant for just literally a laptop and a PC, which, if you're streamlining everything down to that level, it makes sense. Once again, we're looking at things where certain manufacturers are switching over from case in point, one of the things we use quite a bit around here are document cameras. They've been switching over from, you can get doc cameras that are considered a source, but most of the newer generation stuff is now viewed more as a USB peripheral. So we are kind of slimming down certain things in the classroom. God help us. At least a good number of years ago, there would be the VCR DVD combo. There would be the doc cam. There would be the computer. There'd be the laptop, and then there'd be the mysterious aux input that we'd all look and go and say, what are we going to use this for? I don't know. But, things do kind of slim down. And I think as certain classrooms progress or as certain teaching styles get going, there might end up being more where it's, oh, look, here's the classroom. Oh, what's in it? A Solstice pod or a wireless collaboration unit and everything, and the teacher is just running everything off an iPad. And can they do that now? Yeah, of course. It's really a matter of what the faculty is comfortable with. God, as I say, the other part that we all know is there are some that will do death by PowerPoint. There will be some that will do. That will actually want to go and say, you know what? I want to actually do a distance lecture series, and I want a Zoom room. Okay. Can this room do a Zoom room? No. But it's it's one of those ones where we have the this is nice to have versus this is must have. And, you know, Ernie, I know of all people, you definitely have gone through the realms of it would be nice if we could do this is a nice to have. And then there's the no, this actually needs to function as this, especially in the fact that you have specialized medical classrooms.
Right. And we have done our own kind of version of this in that we're out refreshing about 30 classrooms over the next few months. Mm-hmm. And we can do a refresh in a half day in these rooms because we've done exactly that. We've bought, you know, just pallets of the same component.
Mm-hmm.
And we've, you know, my guys have gone through and they've built a couple test rooms and they got it down to a half day, even with, you know, some couple of hiccups in the system, they were still able to get it done. So
now I'm going to ask you, Ernie, though, with these rooms, is it like multiple inputs or is it just literally like, here's your laptop input and here's your PC, you know?
It's a PC and a laptop. We're doing the same thing you're doing with document cameras. It's now a peripheral on the computer. But these are – the tricky part is these are dividable rooms. So it's either two rooms or one room with dual projection. And figuring out how to do all of that, we can do all that for – we can do a double room in a half day. Just what we're throwing up, you know, this is – now this is after – our cable pull team has come through. We don't pull structured cable.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having part of the deal is we're going to have to recable these rooms anyway. They're old Cat 5 and some of them are split pair network, you know, and it's just not, you know, it was one of the first buildings that was networked on campus and they're having to redo it. We're actually having to build a new network closet for the building. The building was built in the 70s. So the telecom room had enough room for all the telephone lines you needed for the building.
Oh, God. I'm already thinking of the massive size of the punch-down block in there. But
yeah.
That's besides the point there.
Yeah. So we're building a couple of new network closets in the building. Mm-hmm. And we'll be – when they get the cabling run out, we can do all of our stuff. You know, mm-hmm. the in-room wiring, you know, mm-hmm. between points, the point-to-points, mm-hmm. Replace the computer, replace the projector, mm-hmm. hang a camera in the room, an occupancy sensor, a wall sensor to know if the wall's open or closed.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're putting Crestron multi-room processors in the network closet. So they'll each handle 10 rooms.
Dang.
But yeah, we figured out it's very similar to what Lone Star was doing in that, you know, it's a package deal. There are no options. This is what we're doing. But yeah, since we manage the classrooms and they're used by multiple colleges, you know, mm-hmm. medicine in the morning, pharmacy around noon, nursing in the afternoon type deal. So they all have the same features, and they know what to expect. And
it goes down that realm of either we're creating tiered or standard, like actual
right.
levels of it. It's, you know, how fancy of a Corolla do you need?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's where we are.
Yeah. As I say, Scott and Rob, it's like I said, it's getting down to the, literally we're now making a standardization. It is impressive that they did 100 rooms in what, 20 days, I believe, 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was 20. Yeah. I think it was, that's actually very interesting, but we're doing a lot of the same thing that Ernie's doing as far as building a room, building a podium in our workshop, rolling it in half a day. This article though really got me thinking about, what you're talking about, Bill, of we are kind of, slimming down all of our classrooms. But the big one here for me is this that Amazon model that people have been kind of afraid of Amazon goes and builds this package and you kind of send it out to local vendors who are willing to go put it in. So again, this is something to think about how it affects us, how it affects the future and how it affects integrators.
Well, that's where I'm going to go and I'll just keep it to this. I think that's when you're going to start getting really drilling down into how the user interface works out. You know, it's and you know, once again, we have our own in-house programmer and everything, and we do try to actually have sessions with the faculty, so we at least get that where it's like where it's we try to make it as intuitive as possible. Although I will say our statistics folks kind of tend to drive us nuts because they go and say, well, it says touch to begin, and then I touch it. That's an extra button push. And over this, and I'm like, yes, I get it. You're over the course of the entire year, you've probably burned an extra 2 calories. Thank you. But I really do think it's going to push that like that. Once we kind of get down this slimming down, you're going to see a lot more emphasis on user design and you know, user interface. As to how, you know, how folks actually either work with a touch panel, how they work with a control surface, whether it's a keypad, whether it's hard buttons, software buttons, that kind of thing. I think that's the next step where we're going to start going. And then, you know, I'm sure all of our marketing folks are going to see all this and go and say, oh, we have to go and make it the school colors. And I'll go, that's not really intuitive in colors. Especially for us, yeah. We're orange and black.
and then I agree about interface, and that's always been one of our arguments about doing stuff in-house. We understand it, our customers understand it, but really, especially in higher ed right now, it comes down to money. And if you can put these rooms in, and they're putting a standard interface, just a little different from what you've already always done, but if you can put these rooms in for a significantly less amount than we're putting them in for, yeah. Even we have to really think about is that the right thing to do for our colleges.
It turns into the talk of, is it good enough? That's what I think this kind of boils down into. That might be something for a later topic. We are at the end of our time here. Rob, I do apologize. We're just hitting the bumper here. Once again, gentlemen, where can we find all you fine folks at? Mr. Tyner?
You can find me on LinkedIn, or I'm always hanging around out at Twitter at @ftyner.
Mr. Raspberry?
Find me on LinkedIn, Rob Raspberry.
All right. And as always, Mr. Bailey?
I'm on LinkedIn.
All right. There we go. You can find me on LinkedIn as well as on Twitter. As always, this is EdTech, a monthly higher ed tech podcast, part of AV Nation. Once again, this is EdTech.